And now, live from Jerusalem, you're listening to Israel Inspired Radio. Here are your hosts, Rabbis Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel.
Shalom and welcome to Israel Inspired on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. This is Jeremy Gimpel with Ari Abramowitz, and today we have a wonderful surprise for you.
I think everyone needs to look around right now, see where they are, and remember where you're sitting right now, where you're standing, what you're doing, because you're going to be telling your grandchildren about this moment, because we are launching a new host on thelandofisrael.com network. And it's not just any host. I'm like a high school girl from the 60s watching the Beatles, like freaking out, nearly passing out. That's how I get when I'm with this great spiritual leader who I also count as one of my dearest friends in the world. Jeremy, what's his name?
His name is Rabbi Shlomo Katz, and he's going to be hosting a new show on the Land of Israel Network weekly, because the Land of Israel Network has sort of a broad spectrum of the ideas we're trying to share. Some of them will be straight up political. Some of them will be brand news from Israel. But then without infusing spirituality, without bringing God into the conversation, without bringing the Torah into the reality of our lives, then we're missing the whole point. And so the goal of the show that Shlomo Katz will be hosting is to bring true Torah Eretz Yisrael, the Torah of the Land of Israel, in a spiritual light from Zion to all of our listeners around the world.
That's right, and that's why we need to have him on the program, because it's a lot of people have a message that's true, but to deliver it in a way that is deeply inspirational and uplifting, because light is exactly that. It's something that illuminates. It's something that brings one closer to a clarity, and that's what Shlomo's about.
I just like the fact that you admitted to everyone that you're like a little girl from the 60s.
Yes.
Anyway, Shlomo, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Ecstatic. Absolutely ecstatic, excited, nervous, happy, privileged to be here.
Well, Shlomo just became the rabbi of a shul in Efrat, originally from Los Angeles. Did you ever think that your life, when you grew up in Los Angeles, would bring you, obviously you're a world-renowned musician, you teach people that tune in from all over the world, but to actually have your own kehillah, your own community in the hills of Judea, your own synagogue, your own flock that you're now shepherding, did you ever think that that was going to happen to you when you were in L.A.?
When I was in L.A., I thought about three colors that were in front of my eyes. Dodger blue and purple and gold, my Lakers. That's all I had, the Lakers and Dodgers. This is all what's called, what I feel is a matnat chinam, an undeserved gift to be here, just to even be here, undeserved gift, but together with a bunch of incredible people, have our own community. This is an undeserved gift that I wake up every morning and have to remind, I don't have to remind myself how lucky I am. It's truly a natural, organic growth, and it feels so real.
All right, so give us like a little bit of background about who you are. If in L.A., you were living this sort of shallow life, Dodgers in L.A.
Well, as long as we're talking about the Dodgers, I just need to ask you a question. Golden State Warriors, aren't you also a fan of them? Because Golden State is California. Is that also, how many teams do you have?
No, we had one. In L.A., we had one.
Okay, so Golden State Warriors don't count as...
Golden State? No.
Okay, because I'll just tell you, the other night, I was up all night with Jeremy and his boys watching the Golden State Warriors against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I'll tell you, like, Jeremy's son said something which gave me hope. For some reason, Jeremy, you're associating yourself with the Golden State, and you're like, we, when you're talking about the Golden State just because they're on top.
No, well, it's because LeBron James fired the Israeli coach, and my basketball preferences are based on my Zionist politics.
Okay, well, anyways, your son's quickly adopted the we for the Golden State, and when Cleveland went on top by 2 points, Akiva said, oh, this is bad news for the Jews. And I was like,
because Steph
so,
is very, you know, because Steph has a Hebrew tattoo.
He has a Hebrew tattoo, right, that's right. And LeBron James apparently is anti-Semitic because he didn't like David Blatt, even though that I heard he said that Schottenstein, a Cleveland right. Jew, should be one of the most influential people in America.
And he's consulted with Rabbi Pinto before as well.
Right, but really? Either way, we pinned him as an anti-Semite, and that's what he is. So, but just hearing Akiva say bad news for the Jews, it was so refreshing to me, because Jews are this demographic that historically, because of the exile and the collective traumas we've been through, never have a self-interest. What demographic votes against their self-interest more than Jews? And to say, this is what's good for the Jews, and what's good for the Jewish people right now is to return home to the Land of Israel. And that's what this week's Torah portion is about. It's about the sin of the spies. And if there's one sin that we need to be rectifying right now in our generation, it's the sin of the spies. And what did they do? They spoke poorly about the land of Israel. And is that not a central theme of what you do, Shlomo?
Please, God, it's hopefully a central theme of everything that I'm blessed to be involved with. We're here to make sure that we don't go again and repeat that sin of the spies. The sin of the spies is very, very confusing because how could it be that such great people said what they said? How could that be? So there's many different ways of looking at it, but one of the main things is something that I think about all the time, and it happened to me 2 years ago in Cape Town. I was in Cape Town for Parashat Shlach. I remember I said the following, and I made a few people a little bit uncomfortable, but that's okay, because we like doing that, right? Although you guys make me feel very comfortable, but I know you're sometimes you make people feel uncomfortable, that's okay. Comfortable, uncomfortable questions.
Out of your comfort zone is the place for growth.
You got it.
We're just trying to spur growth.
When God told us to go, when he said, if you want to go send the scouts, go for it, what was he saying? He wasn't saying, go check and see if this is good for you or not. He was basically saying, you want to get a glimpse of what I look at all day long? Do you want to just see what I look at? Not, do you want to test and see if it's good for you or not? We misunderstood the reason. All we really wanted, all God really wanted us in this whole inyan, this whole matter of the spies, was to see what he looks at. Because it says in another place in Deuteronomy, God's eyes are on the land of Israel every single day. I connect my friends that I'm closest to are the ones who actually ask me to see a picture of my children, even if they don't know them. Because real friends to mine today are only those that really, really know who my children are or connect to what I'm most connected to. That's what the whole purpose of the Meragim, of the spies was what was all about. So without pressure, what do you guys feel about my children?
I love them. Ed and my daughter went to Gan with your
True.
Daughter,
too fair.
And they've been soulmates ever since. But now, we're raising, I'm in the middle of talking. Are you always interrupting me?
I want to tell him how I think about his children.
No, you get that. You can talk about his children when it's your turn.
Now I have shrines. Turn. I have posters up.
Okay. So here's the question.
I don't want to.
No, because I know you. Because for those of you that don't know Shlomo Katz, first of all, you can obviously check out his music, download his music, read his articles, plug into the classes that he's giving at shlomokatz.com. But for those of you that don't know what he looks like, he's got a beard, he's got payas, he's got earlocks behind. He looks like he walked out of a Bible. The guy's like a righteous Jew. But again, I just want to go back because we're introducing you now to the audience that's listening. How did it happen that you went from a Lakers fan to becoming a spiritual guide, to becoming a rabbi, to be a musician that's inspiring others to sort of cleave onto something higher than themselves? Did something happen in your life that sort of sparked that transition into a higher dimension? What happened?
Rabbi Shlomo Karlebach. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Shlomo Karlebach. Well, I'm sure many of our viewer listeners have, you know, heard that name before and are exposed to a certain extent. And we'll talk a lot of what we're going to be doing in our portion of the week classes. Our sessions are going to be a lot based up from his teachings. He was probably the most influential figure in my life. He himself, his name was Shlomo. He was a rabbi and a musician. His rich passion and I would say his roots, the roots of the Karlebach family go back many, many years. It was an illustrious German rabbinic family. And from his mother's side, they were from Switzerland, from Basel. But he was really the key figure that kind of had the most influence on me and even made L.A. a spiritual journey for me as well.
Well, so those that know Reb Shlomo may know this, but what is it about his Torah, about his way of life, that was different than the other rabbis that you were exposed to in your upbringing? What was it about him in particular that was like, wow, this is something that I want to model my life after? I mean, that's pretty monumental. What is it about him?
Very simple. I can answer it really simply. He did not, as far as whatever I got, there were never answers, questions being answered. A lot of us have questions, we want answers from rabbis. And rabbis try to answer, and they usually don't do a good job, not because their answers are wrong, but because that's not what people are really looking for. They're not looking for answers. They're looking for meaning to their questions. So I knew this was my derech, this was my way, not because I was like, oh, now he satisfied the questions I have. It's that, wow, this journey is going to be so much more meaningful now. When you do that shift in your mind of, it's not that he answered better than that person, but that my meaning in life now is enriched, then you realize, oh, that's what I was looking for. I wasn't looking for questions, for answers. I was just looking for meaning.
Let me ask, did he face resistance in his time? I mean, he was one of the greatest spiritual leaders of the generation, particularly looking back. I mean, what other rabbis have entire movements in cities in Israel that are devoted to their teachings? But during those times, did he face resistance and pushback?
To the utmost. We don't know how to deal with eclectic minds. They're always a threat. Eclectic minds are threats to us. Even today, I'm sure there are great people who, till 120, will die, and they're going to become great only when they're dead. Right now, I mean, you guys are already big. Don't worry. You guys are already great.
Right.
We're not worried
Ari
about
is
the
huge.
Two of you.
That's why they say, Achremot Kedoshim Emor. Right? After the person dies, then they say...
Tremendous, tremendous resistance. Tremendous. But the truth is, not just that we don't know how to deal with eclectic minds, is that when a person's in a body, he's somewhat limited. But when a person is stripped away from that physical limitation, it's just the soul that's influencing. That's why it reaches far beyond the boundaries that they had while they were alive. But with him, it's good you bring it up, Ari. With him, it's really relevant, more than most cases. Absolutely. I was once listening to a radio show with him in Kansas City in 1974, the morning after a big concert that he had in the Jewish day school there. And the interviewer said, Rabbi, did you realize that you made the kids feel, the little kids there in the concert last night, feel uncomfortable? He's after the concert. He said, what do you mean? He said, well, you greeted them with such warmth, and you greeted them, hugged them, said, hello, what's your name? You made them feel uncomfortable. So he said, it's good. I'm happy they feel uncomfortable. He said, what do you mean? He said, they need to know there's something else more than just shallow hello, good night. He knew what he was. He was very aware. I don't think he expected people to really understand what he was doing, or not just understand, but support and believe. I think that he really believed that God was his best friend. And when you're in that place, you could handle the resistance. You can handle that place.
Well, you know, for those of them listening to our show for a long time, they know that Rabbi David Zeller was my first rav. I mean, I was in high school. I was so far from anything spiritual. What the Judaism that I was presented in my high school made me said, if that's a religious Jewish Orthodox life, I want nothing to do with it. And all of a sudden, I met Rav David at his Shabbos table. And every Friday night, he would invite me to sit at his Shabbos table with his son Mordechai. And then I encountered an experiential Judaism that was something so different. And he, of course, received ordination from Rav Shlomo, one of the few people that got smicha from Rav Shlomo himself. So Rav Shlomo is such a part of really the ruach and the spirit of everything that Ari and I teach and do. And it's awesome to have that voice strengthened here on the network. But I would say from your voice, Shlomo, you give over classes that my wife and I attend as much as we can. Ari's attended your classes. What is your hope that the people that come and listen to you, when they walk away, what do you want them to walk away with?
Two main things. One is that we connect with each other, that the distance between teacher and student really ceases to exist after a few moments, that there's really a connection between learner, between the just a bunch of souls that are hungry for Emet, for truth. So connecting to each other. But more importantly is when they walk out of there, what I pray and I hope and I dream is that the words that we study, like you mentioned before, become experiential and do not remain theoretical. I think we must graduate from the tree of knowledge back to the tree of life. We must now. It used to be an option. It was like a luxury. Like, oh, if you could tune into the tree of life, you're good. But if you have the tree of knowledge really set in, you're also good. It's not anymore. We're almost really done with the era of the tree of knowledge. And we need to graduate from there.
Could you explain when you're saying the tree of knowledge, the tree of life? Tree of knowledge is abstract, intellectual, remains in the head. The tree of life, are you saying, is more holistic?
No, he said, it's what Jeremy said. It's experiential. Knowledge, the experience of knowledge is very limiting. Very limiting.
So, LeBron James, watching the Golden State Warriors, the Cavs win, and LeBron James falls to his knees.
Confession?
Yes.
3 tears from my left eye when he went down on the floor.
And each one of those tears represents one of the exiles. No, but when I was watching him and he was crying and I was watching their coach crying.
He experienced the years. He didn't just experience that moment. It's amazing you're bringing this up. I am, as you know, an NBA freak. He experienced every ounce of blood, sweat, and tears that brought him to that place. It was an experience. It wasn't, I know that I now became a champion. If he knew that he just became a champion, you think he'd experience anything? Nothing.
Right. Well, and it was also all of the denials and the failures that led to the apex of that happiness, which is why we say when we return to Zion, we'll be like dreamers. Hazorim bedim'a barina yiktsor. When we sow with tears, we'll reap with joy.
Correct.
But I found myself envious. I said, I want to yearn for Yerushalayim, for the ingathering of the Jewish people for the temple, right, like that. And I don't feel it right now like that. I have moments, but it's not something I carry with me always. I feel like you carry with a lot more, definitely a lot more than me. And I feel it when I'm in your shiurim, which is why if there's a shiur to go to, I'm going to yours. But what is that X factor? What is the way to make it experiential?
Well, if I'm not in tune with myself, I won't experience anything. You don't have to be in tune with yourself to be in tune with to know for knowledge. You don't have to be close to yourself. You could just gain knowledge, as more and more knowledge could be accumulated. But you don't have to be in tune with yourself. You don't have to feel what's going on inside of you. You think that anyone that made a big impact on Am Yisrael, on the nation of Israel spiritually, you think that they weren't in tune with themselves? They were completely in tune with themselves. When I mean in tune with themselves, at the risk of sounding very, you know, New Agey, they were meditative beings. They didn't just walk into a synagogue for a shacharit morning services at 8:10 or 7:30 and make sure they caught up with the chazan, with the leader, to say Shema and continue. They breathed. They got centered. They were mindful. They were filled with mindfulness. So that's a key factor. Like you're saying, what's the X factor there? You need to be mindful. You need to be aware. We need to truly be experiential Jews.
You know, the divine orchestration of this conversation. I just got an email video from a guy that I'd never met before from California. His name is Michael. And he saw me in our new video vlog that we're doing on the Land of Israel YouTube channel. I'm like walking through the mountains here in Neve Daniel on my way to Daven Shacharit. And I'm just telling you, yeah, I'm on my way to morning prayers, but I don't really just pray in a synagogue from a book anymore. Most of the time I'm out here in the mountains. And he said, well, could you explain a little bit more about that? And so I just finished the vlog. I'm uploading it to YouTube right now as we're like this show is going on. And one of my points that I say there is exactly that. This used to haunt me years ago. I used to wonder, this is like in 11th grade, 12th grade, who's the real Jeremy? Because in front of the jocks, I'm acting one way. In front of my smoking friends, I act another way. In front of my righteous friends, I act one way. And then I had a girlfriend. I'm like, ooh, she's bringing out something very, maybe that's the real me. But no, that's just another aspect of myself. Who is the real Jeremy? How do I tune into my real self? And the only way I've found where there's the authentic Jeremy, where there's no mask, is when I'm standing alone before God. It's just, I'm clear. There's nowhere to run. It's like Adam in the garden. There's nowhere to hide because here I am. What pose can I strike in front of the Creator? There's just me. And once you tune into yourself, then you can even begin. And then, you know, talking from that place for 10 minutes, being in that place for 15 minutes, it sort of realigns your whole day because you've tapped into your real self for a while. Because sometimes we get lost in the mask behind the radio show personality or the mask behind the husband personality or the mask behind the father personality. But who is the real Jeremy? The real Jeremy is only when I stand alone before God. And then tuning into that, I think, is the only key to like opening up the gateway to the tree of life.
So, you know, Jeremy's talking about prayer. For me, I'm right now sort of at a low point when it comes to prayer. It's becoming too liturgical, and then I'm like, okay, I'm just going to do hitbodedut, you know, just talking to God, but that's not really taking for me. And I was reading the Torah portion, and it was there was a moment that doesn't usually strike me. Sometimes my eyes scan over when it comes to the sacrifices, right? So we read the whole part of the Sin of the Spies, and then we shift to the sacrifices, and God says, you know, there's the flour and the oil, and it says, because this would be a pleasing aroma to Hashem. And I got excited. I was like, well, what do I want? That's really what I want to do with my life. And I want to do something that is a pleasing aroma to Hashem, but I don't exactly know how to do it. And then I said, when do I feel that in my life? What's a pleasing aroma to Hashem? And, you know, I thought of the quote from Hosea. It says, for I desire loving kindness, not sacrifices, and knowledge of God more than burnt offerings, right? Loving kindness, but even more so than that, like exactly what you said, it's being true to ourselves. And when you look at Kalev and Yehoshua, they came back and talk about pressure. There were 10 spies. These were the leaders, the princes of the generation, pressuring them big time. And then the whole nation was against them. And the two of them stood there with a clear vision and knowledge and understanding. And they said, no, this is a good land. We can take this. They're bread in our hands. And they were true to that, even though it was seemed realistic and they were shouted down, but they were true to themselves. And I think on some level, that is what is the big attraction to you. I'm not supposed to praise you in front of you. You've got lots of terrible things about you, I know. I'm not going to go
let's
into
talk,
that.
Let's talk about those.
Over time, okay. we'll let those out. But you know, people call you the Shlomo Carlbach of the generation. I dislike that. Because it's not true.
I just liked you so much more this second.
Because it's, I do connect to Rav Shlomo, but you're different than him. What you've done is taken an inspiration, integrated it into yourself, along with Rav Kook and the Lubavitcher Rebbe and many different influences, and you are authentically you, and you are expressing that, which is why I'm so happy. I feel like when I was like in the 6 or 7 years old in the first grade, we'd have the show and tell, and I was so excited about show and tell. That's what I feel about you. Like, we're going to be able to bring you to the world, to bring you to our listeners, and hopefully by them encountering someone that's authentically themselves, they too will be able to be authentically themselves.
I hope that we continue to be authentic. I hope that this show enables me to, what Jeremy said, brings me closer to the real me, which is a lifelong journey. It doesn't end.
Yeah.
We'll keep on figuring that out together.
You know, we always like to touch on the Parsha, I mean, especially now that we got Reb Shlomo involved. And I think about the Torah portion of the spies. And we know that the Jews did a lot of mistakes in the desert. I mean, they worshipped the golden calf. There was Korach. I mean, just over and over again complaining and making mistakes. But the one that was like, oh, you did this, you're out. You're not coming into the land of Israel. It was the sin of the spies was somehow greater than the sin of the golden calf of idolatry. And I'm thinking that today in modern day Israel, from a secular perspective, you look at Israel and it's like, man, these are impossible challenges we are facing. We got 1 billion Muslims around us that want to throw us into the sea. We have Israeli citizens that are Muslims that are rising up in an intifada against us. We have the European Union against us. We have the Obama administration against us. They're like insurmountable, giant problems, fortified problems in the land that seem impenetrable. And without bringing God into this conversation, we literally do not stand a chance. And what do Kalev and Yehoshua ultimately say? And that is like the message that our generation must hear, is that with HaKadosh Baruch Hu by our side, all of these giants are like little grasshoppers, that we can accomplish whatever we need to. But if we don't bring God into the conversation, then we're going to miss the entire boat.
On that note, I have to say something important. One of my chavrutas, one of my study partners, is a gem of a person, the most humble person I know. He happens to also be Bibi Netanyahu's son-in-law. Now, I've always had one question for him, and one question only. What's Bibi's deodorant? No, I asked him.
I thought it was going to be boxers or briefs.
No. The question I have had, a simple one. All I want to know, does Bibi believe in the existence of the living God? That's all I want to know. Does he believe in Hashem? You're looking at me like, of course he doesn't.
No, what's the answer?
Okay, good.
What's the answer?
I don't know.
Oh, we don't know.
I don't know. What's exactly what you said. Like, you could have the greatest heroes. I'm not saying how observant you are, how much you abide to the Torah, to the Halacha. Is God part of your functioning with all these large, gigantic problems? Is that even part of it?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know how much it really matters whether intellectually he believes, because we all know the intellect is just like the little tip of the iceberg sticking out of the water. I think his actions are a manifestation that there's a good level of that belief. Why? Because I don't agree with everything he does or even most of what he does, but I do believe he has the best interest of the Jewish people in mind and that he loves the nation of Israel. It's hard to love the nation of Israel without having a deep connection on some deep spiritual level,
correct,
not only to the Jewish people and to the land. So I don't know if it matters so much whether intellectually he's got walls up and he draws those lines. Because one thing that I believe Rav Shlomo said that really impacted me a lot, someone said to him, Rav Shlomo, I don't believe in God. And he said, well, the God you don't believe in, brother, I don't believe in either.
Right.
That we all have these misperceptions and misunderstandings of God that lead us to say, I don't believe in him. Well, that's a step towards the direction of truth.
Correct.
Because you're correct, not believing in a false understanding. So correct. I don't know how much that really matters. Am I off here?
No, you're right. Maybe I should reiterate my concern. My concern is the belief of the Prime Minister in God. How much of it is experiential? How much is it part of his daily experience as a Jew in this world? And I think that if it was more of an experiential belief, then for me and my children, thinking about my children here, I'd be able to be just sleep maybe 20 seconds more at night. That's what I'm saying.
One of your books that I just asked you to bring two more of, because the eight that I bought, I gave away as gifts. And I meant to keep one, and I gave that away too. It's called The Soul of Jerusalem. And I know Rav Kook was a big believer, and that the calling of our generation is to see the beauty of the land. He used to bless people and say, from Tehillim 128, he would say, "May Hashem bless you from Tzion, and may you see the goodness of Jerusalem. May you see it." Meaning in our prayers, when we say, "V'techazena einenu b'shuvcha l'tzion baruch," may our eyes behold it. We're not saying, may we live to see it happening, but give us the eyes to see it happening. And I think that's a primary fundamental message that you have, is not showing people, hoping that something will happen or show them something that's not there, but showing, giving them the eyes to see what's happening right before
us. You're bringing home probably the strongest point of what I pray every day I'm blessed to be part of. For 2,000 years, it was enough to be part of being visionaries. That was enough for 2,000 years. That kept me going for 2,000 years. That my eyes can play two functions, one of actual physical eyesight, and also playing the spiritual realm of, I could see it happening, right? Where that's the galut. That's 2,000 years, and we needed that to stay alive. We're done with that. That's not enough. My children are asking me questions that my grandparents did not ask my great-grandparents. You could attest to that, Jeremy.
What's an example?
Oh, the example is, Abba, why don't we build the Beit HaMikdash?
Same exact question that I get asked all the time. Abba, why are we going to a place that... Why isn't the Beit HaMikdash in the place where you just took me to? What's going on? I refuse to give my children politically correct answers. I refuse.
What answer do you give them?
Oh, our mitzvah is slowly, one day, you know, like that rhetoric, I can't. I won't.
But what do you tell them?
Those answers of, if you look really good, it's really there. No.
You're telling us what you don't tell them. I'm saying what...
What do I tell them?
Yeah.
I'm saying, Tiferet, I'm sitting with you. Also, my second daughter, Ora. Ora and Tiferet, I'm asking that same question with you. And I'm not going to stop asking that question with you until we see the answer.
And it's
I can't go the other way. I won't.
And it's a good question. It's a good question. And I just went up to Har HaBayit this past week to the Temple Mount. And I little gets me internally stirred as much as going up there. And because that sparks a yearning within me. And the injustice that we as Jews aren't able to go up there and pray when it's really in our hands. The walk, the arrogance that they have, that we were learning, the Evan Hashtia, the foundation stone, it was coming out, and there's a part, and the tour person looked and said, "This is the Evan Hashtia," and then the waqf went and stood on it, smiling, knowing what he was doing in front of us, just to, and the arrogance.
This is why I won't go up. This is the exact reason why I don't go up.
But I feel like that's the reason we must go up, because
we're
without fear, that's true. That's the reason I must go up.
I'll tell you why we're different. I'm a Kohen.
Okay.
I'm a Kohen. For me, I'm unemployed in this life. Okay? I'm an unemployed Kohen until Mashiach, until the Beis Hamikdash is rebuilt, until the Holy Temple is rebuilt. I'm not really doing, you're talking about the authentic you. It's very clear to me, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing as a Jew, as a Kohen, until I'm able to do what I'm supposed to be doing.
Now, I'm trembling because I'm so respectfully, strongly disagreeing with what you're saying. Because when non-Jews come up and say, well, how do you connect with God without the blood and the sacrifice? You know, but then we have the verse from Hosea, I desire loving kindness and not sacrifices, and knowledge of God more than burnt offering. What were the Kohanim essentially doing? They were the priests, the intermediaries that were bridging the connection between the Jewish people and Hashem. Right. Are you doing anything other than that right now? Are you increasing that consciousness and that connection that is hastening the final actual tafkid and profession of the Kohanim? What are you doing?
I just want to answer on behalf of Shlomo. Yeah, he's doing his job, but he's doing it with two hands tied behind his back, muffled, with like a bag over his head. He's blinded by the Philistines, and he's trying to connect people to God. But his true function should be a priest in the temple, allowing people to come, blessing them from the Temple Mount. That's the Birkat Kohanim that he should be giving, not in a synagogue under his talis. It needs to be standing in the courtyard of the temple. And until he's doing that, he is truly unemployed.
Okay, well, right now, if we look at the trajectory of Jewish history, the hills of Judea is the courtyard of the temple. And from what I heard, you don't need either hands to be a light unto the nations and to be speaking. But I do want to talk about that, because one thing that stood out to me when I was going through the Torah portion is in chapter 15 in Tetvav, it says, as you do, so shall the convert or the person who has been with you for generations do. It says this a number of times. It doesn't talk about just the Jewish people. It says the convert, and not only the convert, those who have been with you for generations. And I think about this girl I met just a couple weeks ago, and she's here in Israel on a visa. And her great-grandmother was one of the righteous Gentiles that hid Jews in her home in Germany. And she said that her great-grandmother's mother and her parents, this is through generations. There are many people who listen to our program, who are going to be listening to your program, many people who are not Jews. What is the calling for them? What is your message to them? Do you have a message to them?
On the contrary, they have a message for us. Be yourselves. I want to pick up on what they're really trying to tell me. We're waiting for you to be you. Why? Because I'm waiting for me to be me.
Everybody's waiting for us to be us.
Everyone.
I think the Arabs too. I think their hatred for us is a manifestation of a deep subconscious resentment that we are not the biblical people.
I'm with you on that too. But I feel that they're saying, we're waiting for you to be you so that I can truly be me. Meaning, Rabbi Shlomo Kabach once said, what is this concept of we're the chosen people? And that's the thing, you know, if you say you walk around the campus today, say you're a chosen person, you're the biggest, you know, bigot, fascist, racist that exists, right? What are we chosen to do? We're chosen. Our chosenness is to implement into people that they're chosen for something special as well. But that's got to be through us. Making people feel good about themselves, feeling special in God's eyes, is through my chosenness. But if I'm not feeling chosen, and I'm not acting as a chosen person, everyone loses. Everyone. So, yeah, there are a lot of messages we can share out of Zion, but what the echoes of Zion are echoing back like a boomerang is that, guys, where are you? We need you to be you. And that's what I'm really excited about for this program, because I never really had that. Most of my activities are really in the Jewish world, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, but it's time for, I think, us Jewish people to really receive that holy patch, which is, you know, like a little smack and say, yalla, be you. Just be yourself.
You know, I'll tell you, Jeremy and I are asked to speak around Israel, around the world. We have groups coming here. And one of the things that I enjoy the most is when groups from around the world come here to Jerusalem and ask us to come speak. I've tried to make my presentation briefer and briefer to leave room for questions and answers, because I find that when I say what is their message to me, a lot of it is questions. And the questions that they ask elicit from me thoughts and feelings and answers where I honestly feel like a cow that's in pain that needs to be milked. And they're like, as weird as a visualization as that is, which for me, unfortunately, right now isn't that far off. but that is something that I find the questions that they bring. And your books, you know, The Soul of Jerusalem. By the way, if anyone out there wants to reach out to Shlomo, write to Shlomo, Shlomo, at thelandofisrael.com. If you want to buy his books, email him, he'll send you to the right place. There's also The Soul of Shabbat. That's a book.
Hanukkah. The Soul of Hanukkah.
The Soul of Hanukkah?
Soul of Jerusalem, Soul of Hanukkah, and Evan Shlomo.
There's also The Soul of Shabbat. I'm sorry you have to find out this way.
Okay.
You haven't written The Soul of Shabbat? It
hasn't been published yet, but it's written.
Okay, so I got the transcript.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, in the Torah portion this week, it really does. It talks about Shabbat, and it juxtaposes it in a strange way. This man that is gathering sticks on Shabbat, which is a very strange story, and it juxtaposes it right next to the story of idolatry. And really, the reason I think that is because when you violate Shabbat, there is a underlying message of idolatry, which is saying it's in my hands. When we keep Shabbat, yes, this is a tough world. Economics are hard. You have to put food on the table. When you keep Shabbat, you say, I'm just not going to work right now. It's really ultimately in Hashem's hands. And I think that Shabbat is a message also that we need to not only give to the Jewish people, but to the entire world.
The whole world is waiting to sing the song of Shabbos. The whole world is waiting to sing the song.
That is so true. Folks, this is Rabbi Shlomo Katz. I'm Jeremy Gimpel and Aria Bramwell. You're listening to Israel Inspired on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. You can always reach out to us at ari@thelandofisrael.com, jeremy@thelandofisrael.com. My WhatsApp group is rocking it, folks. If you want to join the WhatsApp group with the videos that I'm sending out, YouTube gets about 80% of them, but there's a special 20% that's not like a YouTube thing. It's just like a personal connection thing. You got to write in and I'll add you to our WhatsApp group. And folks, we're launching our Cause Match campaign to finish our headquarters. We're going to be sending out an email about that very soon. If you want to donate right now, you can go to thelandofisrael.com, click on the donate button, and we'll take you right there. Shalom from Jerusalem. Rabbi Isaac Nissenbaum, one of the founders of the religious Zionist Mizrahi movement, wrote, "The objective of Mizrahi is the total revival of our nation in all its aspects, to revive Judaism in our hearts and to revive our hearts for Judaism. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement."
Do you like picking strawberries or blueberries in the spring and summer? What about grapes? If you were to take an experience like picking grapes and move it to the heartland of Israel, this is when an experience becomes prophetic. Young and old, singles and families are all invited on this adventure of a lifetime. I'm Joshua Waller with Hayuvel, and I invite you to join us on the mountains of Israel, where prophecy meets reality. Go to Hayuvel.com, that's H-A-Y-O-V-E-L.com, for more information.